As we have just been singing, words matter. It matters what we say, and it matters how we say it. I could say all of those words up on the screen in a certain way, and it might never offend you. But I could say all the words on the screen up there in a certain way, and you might be offended by how I say it. But as we think about in this month, the idea of reflecting Christ, the question then comes to us, how do our words reflect Jesus Christ? We see Jesus in the way that he talked. In the 7th chapter of John, the Pharisees had told their guards, their officers, to go and grab Jesus. And the officers come back, and they say, and the Pharisees say, Where is he? Why don't you have him with you? And the response of the officers in verse 46 of chapter 7 is, never has a man spoken the way this man speaks. The Son of God spoke with grace, with power, with majesty, with eloquence. And so when we think about Jesus and how he spoke, there could be a sense in which we go, how in the world can I ever have my speech be like him? But he calls us to be a reflection of him. And so we want to look at that this morning. As we think about his words had impact. Everyone who heard him was changed by his words, either positively or negatively. We see that it talks about in scriptures that as Jesus was teaching, several times the scriptures say that the multitudes were amazed at his teaching. They were amazed at the way in which he taught, the authority which he had. We see that many who heard his words believed that he was the Christ, that he was the Messiah. We also see, though, that his words had negative effect. When he was talking with a rich young ruler, we see that the man went away sorrowful when he heard the words of Jesus. And others disbelieved because of his words. The Pharisees, in particular, said there in chapter 7 of John, no one of the rulers or Pharisees has believed in him, has he? But his words were always seeking to change the lives of people for the better. In Isaiah 50 and verse 4, one of the servant songs, there it says, the Lord God has given me the tongue of those who are taught, that I may know how to sustain with a word him who is weary. When you think about Jesus' words, his words were what people needed. Jesus interacted with people from all walks of life, from high-ranking government officials to beggars and lepers. But the thing that is consistent throughout all of that is that he met people where they were. Jesus never said, well, before I can ever talk to you, you got to clean up your life. He said, I'll just speak to you where you are. He wasn't afraid of messy situations in their lives, but his words sought to help and not harm people and their situations. I mean, just think about Jesus and the way in which he talked for just a moment. What we find is that his words were compassionate. In Mark chapter 10, beginning there in verse 13, it says, and they were bringing children to him so that he might touch them. But the disciples rebuked them. But when Jesus saw this, he was indignant and said to them, permit the children to come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. And then in verse 16 it says, and he took them in his arms and began blessing them, laying his hands on them. I want you to see a contrast here. Here the parents are bringing their children,
And the disciples are saying, no, he's too busy. Jesus is indignant, he's angered at his disciples for doing that. But what we see with the children is that he's compassionate. It says there that he brought them in, he wrapped his arms around them, and he talked tenderly to them, talked in words that they could understand, and it says he blessed them. Can you imagine what that conversation that Jesus had with those kids was like? It was compassionate. But we also see that his words were not judgmental. In John 8, here's the woman who's caught in adultery. And Jesus has already said to those who are around her, the one who's without sin, let them be the one to cast the first stone. And so it says then in verse 10, straightening up, Jesus said to her, "Woman, where are they? Did no one condemn you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "I do not condemn you either. Go. From now on, sin no more." Notice Jesus didn't call the woman names. He didn't tell her how disgusted he was with her for what she had done. He didn't judge her, but he gave her what she needed. She needed understanding, not condemnation. He had every right to judge her. She was caught in the act. The old law called for there to be stoning because of that, for her to die because of that. And Jesus could have rightly judged her, but he didn't. He gave her a better direction to follow. Sometimes we see that his words were direct and truthful. In Matthew 16, verse 22, after Jesus has told his disciples that he's going to Jerusalem, he's going to be crucified, Peter comes along, and in verse 22 it says, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's interest, but man's." I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to be in Peter's shoes at that moment. Jesus was direct. He told him exactly what he needed to hear. He didn't beat around the bush. He said, "Peter, your focus is on worldly things, not upon godly things. Get it right," is what he's telling him. He says the same thing or a similar way to the Pharisees in Matthew 23. The whole context here is he's telling woes upon the Pharisees. And in verse 27 it says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Jesus wasn't saying these words to the Pharisees because he was trying to get back at them in some way. He was saying that to wake them up so that they would see their sin. He was worried about them. He wanted them to see, you've got to change or else your fate is sealed. Many times we see it's not only what we say, but it's also what we don't say. And the same is true with Jesus. In John chapter 11, we have the death of Lazarus. And it says in verse 33, "When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled, and said, 'Where have you laid him?' They said to him, 'Lord, come and see.' Jesus wept." Now, in the context that we have here, just prior to this, this is Jesus, if we will, conversation with Mary. Jesus has a conversation with Martha. And it's a conversation about what the true resurrection is. That he's saying, "I am this resurrection." Martha, at that point in time, that's what she needed. But we see when Jesus comes to Mary, Mary says this, the very same thing that Martha says. She says, "Lord, I know if you were here that Lazarus would live." But Jesus doesn't say the same thing to Mary. The reality is, he really doesn't say much at all. He just weeps with her. And sometimes that's what is needed more. In all of this, what we see is the power of his words. That Jesus' relationship with the person dictated his words. Notice, he doesn't say what he says to Peter, to the woman caught in adultery. I don't think she could have handled the way that Jesus talked to Peter if he said that to her. But it was the relationship that that Jesus had with Peter. He knew that Peter needed to hear it. He knew that Peter could handle that. That Peter just wouldn't go away from him. But he was going to change. Even with the Pharisees, Jesus didn't start out the very first time that he spoke with the Pharisees and started saying, "Woe, you hypocrites!" And we see he didn't weep with every family that lost a loved one. But what we do see is that as he spoke, he saw the other person's situation. He wasn't focused on how others said things to him and his situation. He was focused upon their situation and how his words could help them. So when we think about that, we ask then, okay, how are we to be a reflection of Christ? Well, what we see is that our words have impact just as well. That we can influence the people around us positively or negatively. It doesn't matter who you are, you have influence because all of us interact with people. It could be just as simple as how you get up in the morning. Does your family fear you when you get up in the morning? Do they fear the words you're going to say? Or are they pleasant to see you because you're going to be nice in the way you say things? It could be just as simple as what you say to the cashier at Walmart. You know, you can brighten their day by the words that you say, or you can make their day that much worse by what you say and how you say it. Young people, I think you have a greater influence than there has ever been in any other generation. And that is because of social media. Not only can you influence your circle of friends, but you can influence someone across the world because of what you say or what you write. Will you join the crowd that's shaming someone on Facebook? Or will you stand up and say, "That's not right"? We all have influence. And the point that I wanted to see is it's not the quantity of influence that I want us to focus on, it's the quality of our influence. If you influence just one person today, how will you do that? How will they be after their interaction with you? Or maybe we say it in this way: do our words meet the needs of others? You see, we reflect Christ by using our words to impact others for the better. That we seek to see their situations rather than react from our own situation. Now let me say that again. We seek to see their situation rather than react from our own situation. Let's go back to Jesus and the example with the children. Was Jesus busy? Yeah. He could have said, "Yeah, disciples, you're right. I'm too busy to send them away." But he didn't do that. Why? Because he wasn't focused on his situation. He was focused on the children's situation, on the parents' situation, and what he could do for them. So the same is true for us. You see, we influence others by speaking the truth in love. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15, here in the context or previous to this, we see in chapter 4, there's this idea of the gifts that God has given to His church. And then in context here in verse 15, it says, "But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ." Now, what does it mean to speak the truth in love? I'll take a page from Josh's class. When you think about Jesus, He's the fullness of truth. But He is also at that very same time the fullness of love. It's not a matter that we balance the two. It's the fullness of both in one. And so what we see then is for us is that everything we say must be true if we are to be a reflection of Christ. But everything we say of that truth must be wrapped in love for the one to whom we speak. John Newton said this, and as he was speaking of reproof, he said, "Our natural temptation is to say what we should not say, or to not say what we should say. One is cruel arrogance, the other cruel cowardice, and neither is love." Reality is, what we're talking about is whatever we say, that truth, it's a matter of how we package it. Let me give you an example. There was a woman, and she was talking with a counselor about her marriage. And the counselor said, well, if there was something that you could change about your marriage, what would you change? She said this. And speaking of her husband, she said, "I'd change his matter-of-fact way of dealing with conflict." Here's what he would normally do. "Here's the problem. Here's the solution. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Move on now. Don't drag it out." Ladies, you ever deal with your husband in that manner? Now think about it. Think about, there is some truth in there. How many of us want to hear the words, somebody say, "I'm sorry. Please forgive me"? There's truth. We want to hear that. But what's the problem with it? It's the way it was packaged. You see, it's not a matter of just saying, "Well, here's the truth, deal with it." Jesus was always coming and saying the right thing, but He said it in the right way, because His focus was upon the person rather than Himself. We also influence others by speaking grace to them. In the same chapter of Ephesians, there in chapter 4, it says in verse 29, after what we read in the scripture reading, that we have put on a new self, we put away the old, it says there in verse 29, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." Now think about this for a moment. How many unwholesome, and that word there means rotten or worthless. So how many unwholesome words have you said this past week? It's easy to say those things. When we are focused upon our situation and what is happening to me. When I am full of, this isn't going right in my life, this is wrong, why can't this work, all of that, what's going to happen is I'm going to come out with rotten words to somebody else because maybe they didn't say something in the right way to me, and so I'm going to get back at them, or on and on the cycle may go. But notice what Paul says here. He says, our words are to only edify according to the need of the moment. That means our focus is to be outward towards others rather than inward toward myself, so that our words can help them, so that our words become grace. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't be direct with our words. We've already seen Jesus was that way. That doesn't mean that we can't get angry and express ourselves in that emotion of anger. Jesus did that. But what that does mean is that when we speak, we are choosing our words so that I can seek to improve someone else's situation. Now think about it. When you spoke this past week, did you think about, I want to try and improve the person I'm talking to? I want to improve their situation? Our country is greatly divided right now by the election. And you can look on the news, you can read social media. There's divisions everywhere. And we can be part of all of that division with unwholesome words. Or we can show others the unity of another kingdom. We can show them that our Creator is in control, and that we are united together from all different races, all different walks of life. We are united together by Jesus Christ. But that begins with words of grace and mercy. As Matt prayed this morning, we can be people who can be bringers of peace, bringers of unity. But it starts not with me saying, what is my agenda? What is it that I want? It is, how can I help that person who I'm about to come in contact with? Now, you say, Adam, you're leaving out one part. How do you deal with the words that come to you? How do you deal with those words that are hurtful to us? And what I would submit to you is that we do the same thing that Jesus did, and that he went and he talked with his Father. He expressed all of his pain, all of his disappointment, all of his sorrow to his Father. And we can do the same, because our Father has the ability to heal our hurt, to comfort our sorrows like no one else. So that when we say, okay, I'm hurt because of what someone else said, take it to God. Don't take it out on someone else. You see, we can speak words of grace because words of grace have been spoken to us. On the cross, Jesus called out and he said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Those are words of grace for you and me. And so our task, our job, is to seek to be a reflection of Jesus Christ. And we do that because he has given us grace. He has shown us grace. And so this morning I ask you, can you say that those words of grace are yours? Are you His child? If not, the opportunity is for you to come and become His child through the grave of baptism. But maybe it is that you look back on your week and you say, you know, I've said a whole lot of unwholesome words this past week. Well, we can come and pray with you so that you can get your life in accordance with God, so that you know that God's grace is there for you. No matter how many times you fail, He's always there if we have that repentant heart. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as together we